The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
You're listening to the Blackshaw Arts Hour. We are a huge team today, actually. We've got the boys back doing some art.
Yes, we are.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Definitely.
Yes, sir.
Alex and Strat are here. Art. They are doing an art. It's imminent. Matt is here. He's going to do a review in a bit.
Evening.
Ellie's here as well.
Hello.
And a voice that we haven't heard for a little bit since the 50th show, I think. Mm. It's Helen Johnson.
Hi.
I love doing this. I feel like a really bad...
like a quiz show host.
Quiz show host, yeah. Come on down.
We should do a quiz.
Yep, we could do that.
It's like quizzes.
Content planning on air, good.
Yeah, no, fantastic.
This will be kept in.
Helen's going to be talking a little bit later about some of the shows, or one of the shows in particular, that she's seen recently. And also Matt's going to review the new Harry Potter-esque film. I just keep calling it Harry Potter-esque because I can't remember the name of it.
I think people will know what you mean.
Yes, exactly. So we'll do that in a little bit, and also hear some new writing. But boys, I'd really like to know what your art is going to be for this week.
We've gone higher brow than the week before. This week... we're doing poetry, but not just any poetry.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. We're going with the easiest one, you know, just the most simple. We're going with a traditional English sonnet.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Not starting at limerick and working up, then.
Nope. Really wish we were.
But in there.
Yeah, if you're going to do art, do art.
Is that your motto?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Art means art, people.
Sure. So how are we feeling about it?
Terrified.
Okay.
Nervous.
It's a nice quiet art, though.
Yeah, well, you'll have the scratching of our pens.
It's a very quiet, you know, like reflective as well.
Yeah.
Know? It's a nice,
that's true.
Nice
that's
thing to do.
That's why I brought
my
mirror. Hey.
The sort of wit we can expect in your poetry.
So much to look forward to.
Yeah. Can you, so just remind us of the parameters in which you're working for this.
Okay, so...
yeah, what do be a sonnet?
A sonnet is 14 lines in length. It has a very particular structure, which is A, B, A, B, C, D, C, D, E, F, E, F, G, G.
That is the rhyme scheme.
That is the rhyme scheme. And it's in a pentameter, so it has five syllables per line.
Ten syllables per line.
Not five. That would be the wrong amount of syllables.
Quite short.
And I'd have only written half a sonnet,
essentially.
At least we caught it early.
Yes.
We caught it now.
You'd have written the left half.
Together, you'd have written the sonnet.
Yes. And that's the English star sonnet. There were the Italian one before that, and then one that we can't pronounce. We tried pronouncing. It begins with a P.
Right, but you can't speak Italian or something you can't pronounce beginning with P. So.
I think it was French.
Yeah, it was French. It's not that it had to be in Italian. It was the style. And then when it came over here to England in the 1500s, I believe. The research I did, then it took on the style that we know, like the Shakespearean style sonnet that we
But do you not think that the style changed because of the language change?
That's what
I
exactly
know.
What Pitkin is saying.
It's quite that's what I was saying. Like, it's quite interesting to take a structure for a poem that's been essentially invented for one language and then just use it for another language because the rhythm of speaking and the structure of the words is different.
Truth.
So it probably ends up with a poem that's not got quite the style that the format was designed for.
But
that's a bigger discussion for which none of us are prepared, so continue.
I'm glad that you guys have done a little bit of research and that you actually know what you're going to be doing. That's helpful. I'm holding a book of Shakespeare's sonnets here. Alex is going to read one to get us in the mood. And
they are setting the bard high.
She said it. I explicitly said I wasn't going to say that pun. Ellie has taken the fall for that one.
I'm owning it.
I thank you for that. So, Alex, find a sonnet, and
that's the pages.
The pages, if, you know, that's a pen.
Don't write in the book, that's cheating.
Are you ready?
I've stopped at sonnet 84.
Okay.
Which, as we all know, is...
doesn't have a name.
Okay,
it's just got a number.
Carry on.
The title is the first line, usually.
Just do it.
Okay, I'm just going to read it.
Okay.
Not nervous at all. Who is it that says most? Which can say more? Than this rich praise that you alone are you? In whose confine immured is the store, which should example where your equal grew? Lean penury within that pen doth dwell, that to his subject lends not some small glory, but he that writes of you, if he can tell, that you are you, so dignifies his story. Let him but copy what is in you is writ, not making worse what nature made so clear, and such a counterpart shall fame his wit, making his style admired everywhere. You to your beauteous blessings add a curse, being fond on praise which makes your praises worse.
Alexander Pankhurst reads the Shakespeare sonnets, available as an audiobook for, just in time for the festive season.
Oh, yeah.
So romantic.
That was very good. Yes. Excellent sight reading.
Thank you. Yeah. That was.
What did it mean?
I have no idea what that was.
Basically, what it says is that
you've got the notes next to it that tell
you. No,
no. Just read them
actually,
out.
I actually understood it, or what I think I understood it.
I could tell from your inflection.
It's basically, you don't need to. Everything is within you. Everything that is beautiful is within you. You don't need to add any more.
Oh, I think it's so beautiful. The
I know, so right? Lovely.
And I just came across that one as random.
And that's a good one. I feel like that's maybe not going to be a reflection of what happens here today.
No,
particularly because, the theme.
Yeah. What is the theme?
Christmas food.
The most romantic of all themes.
Hey. People love food, right?
People love Christmas.
Christmas.
Yeah. Christmas is a season of love.
It is an inspiring topic.
Mm-hmm.
Which made me really hungry.
Yes.
I like to think that the task of actually constructing a sonnet is so high. If we were trying to get real, like, if we were trying to do Shakespeare as well, like, that would be...
That would be a step too far.
Yeah.
That's
we have to try and describe love. While remembering that it's 10 syllables, not 5.
You guys are the worst two people to try and even attempt that, I feel. I feel I can say that on behalf of Helen, who's sat in the room as well. Maybe what you write, actually, you could read at the wedding.
That's a good idea.
No? Okay, that's out.
That'd be an odd thing to do. February wedding, Christmas food sonnet.
I'm just going to do that as my speech now. I'd like to thank these people and now my...
Chapman, what have you done?
I'm really sorry. Okay, so I feel like we need to give you guys the most amount of time to be able to tackle this task. So we're going to bid you farewell. But can you first tell us what you're doing different subjects, right?
Yeah.
No, we're not doing Christmas food.
Just Christmas food.
Oh, yeah, no, we're choosing different foods to talk about.
Yeah, different stuffs. We can choose the food, but it is the same.
I think some overlap and repetition can be allowed because there are some foods that are you're both going to want to mention, I expect.
I think so.
Oh, no, I'm concentrating on just the one.
Right, interesting. Sure. Well, this will be very interesting.
Yeah.
It will. Okay. I feel like we don't have, tools this week. It's weird.
Well, you don't need tools.
We have our pen and our minds.
But I was just thinking, the last two times I've, done a shout-out for the people that supplied our the pencil people and the thing.
Is there a name on your pen?
Power Speaking Ink, because I think that's just advertising. So,
so you should retract that, really.
That's a branded pen.
They've double advertised by having it on the pen. And now you're saying it on a podcast.
It's all right, we're not on the BBC, right? So.
No. I just think we need some money.
I mean, you've limited us quite heavily there.
I can read out the website. It's on there as
well.
No.
Not
I don't
unless
think
they agree
necessary.
To give us money.
I feel like at this point in the show, Strat's really putting off having to do this task.
Yeah.
I feel like this is what this is.
Get out.
The numbers are 1-800.
No.
That's not even UK.
No, get out.
All right, okay.
We care not for your pen.
These guys are going to move off and sit at the table like grown-ups and write a sonnet about Christmas food. And Matt is going to review a film.
The Matt Boothman film review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
Matt, what film are you reviewing this week?
The Harry Potter-esque film.
Official title.
Yeah.
The Aisha title.
The actual title is Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Okay, good.
So this is the first new film in a new Harry Potter spin-off franchise.
I heard there's going to be a ridiculous amount of films.
Yeah.
Mm. How many?
I
five.
Can't remember exactly. Is it five?
Between five and seven.
Five from one book, right?
Well, the book that shares its title was a World Book Day, pamphlet-sized thing.
Right.
It's 30 pages, if that.
Like a zine.
It's basically like a little, it's like a little anthropology guide. It just has like some made up Fantastic Beasts and definitions of them. Like, there's no story in it.
Right.
They've literally just taken the title and the name of the fictional author, Newt Scamander, and built out a new story based on that.
Okay. Interesting.
So it's the first Harry Potter related movie that was written as a movie first, not based on a novel.
Right.
And it shows.
It shows, yes. So it hasn't had to pack like a 500 page novels worth of material into a 2-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
Such a weird 2.5
though. so the story. So this one's set in the States. That's another big difference. It's set in New York.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that annoys me. Carry on. Sorry.
They make hay of the setting. So Newt Scamander, wizard and sort of beast wrangler anthropologist kind of dude, rocks up in New York with a magical suitcase that's bigger on the inside, full of magical beasts. Some of them promptly get away and start causing chaos and escalate an existing situation in New York that Scamander has blundered into, effectively. So there are tensions between sort of this New Salem faction of non-magic people who blame witches for all the city's ills and sort of the magical community. So it's where the Harry Potter movies were set in a British sort of public school sort of setting and were very much about class and made magic all about class. So all the bad guys in it were very concerned about blood and ancestry and all that sort of thing, and like not being common and not being mixed and those sorts of things, which is a very British kind of theme.
Yes.
And this one applies the same sort of thinking, like uses magic as the lens to talk a bit. It feels like it's talking more about segregation. So right. the culture that they... So it's written by J.K. Rowling. She's the only script credit.
Interesting.
So there are usually things behind the scenes in these movies, but...
Strats just dropped his pen.
No tools and still they manage to make noise. whereas in the Potterverse England, there is some sort of contact between magic people and like wizards and muggles, magic people and non-magic people. Mm-hmm. They're very strictly split in Rowling's version of the States.
So in this one, do people know that they exist? Because so they still don't know that. Okay,
no, right. They're under a very strict statute of secrecy.
Sure.
And wizards aren't allowed to like have friends who aren't magic. They're not allowed to marry people who aren't magic.
Oh, no.
And so like our British character blunders into this and is like, this is all very strange and backward. I don't like this at all.
Uh-huh. And this is Eddie Redmayne, who is the main guy. Yes. Yeah. Good.
He's a kind of an odd character. Like he describes himself as, he says people find me annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this kind of like sort of detachment. Like he's sort of, he is the outsider and he's sort of viewing things like almost like an anthropologist, like a David Attenborough, like seeing the behaviour from the outside and studying it rather than really connecting. But then he does, like, what makes him a better character after that is that he does care. And like when you see him sort of caring for his beasts, you see that he's got a really sort of deep connection to them. And when he is, so this whole situation in New York that's kind of about to blow up is one that he doesn't really have any stake in until he sort of meets some people and starts caring about them, so he kind of ends up being...
So he's a nice man.
He's a nice guy.
Okay, good.
Yeah. What do you think of him, Ellie?
He's lovely. Yeah.
Did you love this, Ellie?
Yeah, I really did.
Okay, good.
I felt like it was the same magical universe that we've been in before, but because it was written for screen, it just felt like a smoother ride. And like we had time to get to know people, which I suppose was something that was completely necessary because they couldn't rely on the audience already being in love with these characters.
Yeah.
But something that they did do, I think, is rely on the audience understanding the Potterverse So there was no explanation around magic or how it works, or, you know, everything was a given in that sense.
Mm.
And what's quite another thing that kind of marks it out from the previous movies is they were all about sort of school age wizards who were still under a lot of restrictions about when they could and couldn't use magic, which was all very sort of useful plot wise because it meant that they couldn't always just like wave their wand and magic themselves out of a situation.
Yeah, sort things out.
Whereas this is all sort of adult wizards who have jobs and have passed all their tests and are allowed to do magic whenever they want to solve all their problems.
Right.
So you get to see them like being magic fully fledged. A lot more.
Yeah.
So Eddie Redmayne, like Newt, just like teleports everywhere.
Amazing.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
I'm so motion sick. I'd just love to be able to be like.
So yeah. So I have a theory about this movie that the scenes about, and see, tell me if this kind of rings true to you, Ellie, that the scenes where he and his new sort of gang of friends are recapturing his beasts were sort of written. All right.
Literally, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Recapturing his magical beast that escaped from his suitcase.
Yeah.
I have a theory that those scenes were kind of written first and were sort of the pitch for the movie. Like, this is something that families will love, like exciting magical beasties and antics. And that sort of the background plot of the setting of what's going on in New York kind of grew up around that more as a setting and then started to take over. And I've got a feeling that there was probably, and this is pure speculation, but I've got a feeling there might have been a struggle at some point to keep those scenes in.
The hunting for the magical creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I see what you mean. I think also some of the reason for that, rather than just creating this, you know, setting, was that they were already thinking about how is this going to be a franchise.
Mm.
So, you know, that's a lovely idea, the animals getting loose and the caper of getting them back, but that's obviously not got any longevity in terms of follow-up sequels. So I think they obviously then maybe pitched it like that. I think you're absolutely right. And then, of course, producers go, sounds great. How are we going to get more films out of it?
What's the story?
Yeah, there needs to be an overarching story that can run and run for several films.
Yeah.
And actually, I thought the balance of it was quite good. I don't know if there were any kind of behind-the-scenes fights to keep in the kind of magical creature stuff. I can imagine there were. Because I thought there were some sequences, particularly when you get to go inside the suitcase and explore the surroundings that Newt has created to house these creatures. That was like, I felt like a really lovely, indulgent, magical sequence that they really took their time with. I didn't feel, in the same way I felt frustrated with the Harry Potter films, that a lot of those things were kind of like in passing and you didn't get time to really go, oh, that looks amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exactly how I imagined it. And that this really afforded you that time to marvel at something that had been created in that world.
Yeah, and the recapturing creature set pieces act as quite nice kind of stepping stones that, like, just for keeping the plot moving, like, it just happens usually that he manages to recapture one of his creatures and a situation develops where he happened to be.
Mm-hmm.
And also they do tie in because the sort of the bad guys are blaming his creatures for all the destruction that they're causing.
Right.
Yeah.
How do the creatures look? Are they...
They're all CG.
Well done? CG?
I thought they looked awesome. I saw it in 3D as well.
I did not.
I thought it was, what I thought was incredible was the huge range between their appearances. Like I haven't actually looked at the original source material of that kind of pamphlet that's got the dictionary of creatures, which you know, obviously J.K. Rowling put together herself. But the way they were realised, I thought, was just really cool. And the different textures, different shapes, different sizes, different colours, different ways they moved.
Different personalities.
Very good, yes. The personalities were amazing.
Oh,
there
good.
Was there's a favourite, which is also apparently Eddie Redmayne's favourite, which is...
Is this
the
little
pocket.
Ball bag looking thing?
No.
Because
there's a little...
It's the bow truckle, which is like a plant type thing.
Okay.
Which I'm talking about.
Like stick insect sort of thing.
Yeah.
He almost wears like a sprig of... stuff on his lapel.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's this little bow truckle creature.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen much of any of them other than one that popped up on my feed, which is obviously predominantly Australian people.
Sure.
Talking about how one of the creatures looks like a thing called a puggle, which is a baby echidna, and it's like a ball sack.
Is that the one that steals all the shiny
things? I think so,
It doesn't really look like that.
It looks like a little platypus.
A mole or something.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a mole, but literally is exactly the same as what a baby echidna looks like. And I was like, oh, that's funny. It's one of my favourite creatures ever.
Oh, well, what I liked is that...
I'll do a comparison on our Instagram after
yes,
this.
Yes, do.
Yeah.
But you can kind of see a lot of them, kind of how their origins might be, you know, in non-magical creatures. Mm. Or, like, that they're related in some way.
Yeah.
There's a big creature that's a lot like a rhinoceros. Mm. And
That one does look
like a mole.
Yeah, that's nice having that reference, I think, as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of nice. It's inventive and imaginative and magical. But then there's some quite dark stuff in there as well, as there was with Potter. Like, the villain of Potter was, like, an attempted child murderer.
Yes. Mm,
yeah.
And mass murderer of adults.
Yeah. And this one has some sort of relatively tough child abuse stuff in it.
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
Good. A family film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the rating?
I presume
it's
a PG.
PG.
Yeah, okay.
And it's saying some quite interesting stuff about... So I said it sort of feels like it's using magic to talk about segregation in the same way as Potter used magic to talk about class. And it's also with a kind of a new wrinkle to the way magic works in the Potterverse that they've brought in for this. It is talking about how when that kind of culture forces people to constantly hide what they are or who they are, that sort of the only things that can come out of that are kind of darkness and destruction.
Yeah. Okay. So how are we looking at making this a franchise? Does it flow on well? Does it sort of leave you hanging at the end?
It gives you a sort of not a cliffhanger, but gives you a lead into future movies with the introduction of a villain who is sort of somebody who is named but is not a huge part of the original novels.
Okay, that's interesting. And maybe let's talk. I feel like Helen maybe might want to chirp in here and have a bit of a chat about Eddie. You like him, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. See, I'm not a huge fan, but I mean, he's been everywhere doing promo for this. He really seems to have enjoyed shooting it as well, which, you know, is nice to see an actor do that.
I think you could feel that from the film, that all the actors were really, really relishing the role. It's funny because you can always feel that in theatre, I think, when someone's live on stage in front of you. Mm. It's very, very clear. And as an audience member, I think that really influences whether I enjoy a show or not, is whether I can tell that the person performing is really loving it or not. Mm. And it's very easy to turn an audience off if you are either appearing nervous or like you don't want to be there.
You don't want to be there, yeah.
So I think he must have loved it. And certainly that's the impression I've got from the press tour as well, is that all of them just had like the time of their lives doing it. And obviously they were all people who saw all the Harry Potter films and were desperate to be in it.
That's the most incredible thing, I think, about how historic Harry Potter is in culture and everything that, you know, it did in making people who are, you know, big names go and literally wet their pants about being asked to be in a film like this, or, you know, even just looking so excited about doing, you know, press. That's nice. It's really nice to see people that aren't really bored on press tours and, you know, talking to doing all the interviews and stuff. So,
absolutely.
You know,
one of the things I really liked from seeing some of the press coverage was that there's a guy who I've never heard of before who's playing Jacob, is it?
Yep.
The one of the new characters, and he's a well-seasoned stage actor improviser. And
I know this.
So the reason it came up in an interview is they were asked who always gets it in one take, and they were like, this guy every damn time. And of course, people who are used to just working on film aren't like that and don't work that way, whereas he just nailed it in a different way every single time.
Yeah.
Because he's a natural improviser and he's a comedian, and I just thought that was just really refreshing as well, to have, again, someone who's so into being in the film but comes from a slightly different kind of craft background.
And you were saying, I think, as well, because we were talking about this last weekend, that those scenes seem really fresh.
Yeah.
Because they are those first take scenes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I like that.
Or at least
that.
Early takes. I think all the scenes he was in felt noticeably kind of more almost off the cuff, which could be, but that's part because that ties in with his character. But I think it probably is because of the way he is as a performer.
Yeah.
Because his character is supposed to be sort of slightly, you know, always swept up in it and, oh, everything's a surprise. He's new to the magic world. But it really had that kind of super fresh feeling to it. And I think Eddie Redmayne was brilliant. It was really nice to see him in a role which was...
him not playing a woman?
Sure, although I haven't seen that film. But was lighthearted, and I think I felt like maybe he was given quite a lot of freedom in terms of developing the role, because it doesn't exist previously in a full book.
Yeah.
And because J.K. Rowling was the screenwriter, I don't know how involved she was with the production process, but I felt like he'd been given some freedom to really make it his own. And it, in things like he does, this isn't a spoiler, he performs a mating dance ritual type thing for one of the creatures.
I've seen him do this on talk shows, actually.
It's incredible. Like, yeah. He really commits, and it just made me think he really just must be having
the time of his life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you like it, Matt?
I did. I've got sort of two more notes about it, if
okay,
we've got
yeah.
time. One good, one not so good.
Okay.
So the good, it makes a... I really appreciated that it makes a big, impressive CGI set piece of rebuilding after all the destruction. Which I don't think it's a spoiler to say that there's lots of destruction
because
it's a blockbuster movie, but like, given that I think we've talked about this before, that every movie wrecks big cities and we've kind of got inured to it, but I like the fact that they made a
they
big,
put logistical
like,
planning in there a, like, is like there a city planner like that's nice yeah,
they made like a magical sort of inspiring sequence out of everybody rebuilding all the damage.
I feel like
so
you really nice. Would like that, Ellie, because
I feel
like you're like a stickler for like, you know, yeah, but
cleaning
logistics. Yeah.
Maybe you two should write some fanfic about some, like, town planning.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the fan...
Efficient admin.
Yeah, how are we going to get the plumbing back
Health
together?
And safety.
New York, again. I don't know. I feel like you could do that a lot of times after a lot of different...
The thing is, though, they didn't even have to really do any planning. They just walked the streets waving their wands on it.
Oh, yeah, I think maybe in another universe.
Sure, where it's not, there's no magic.
Fun,
yeah.
If you did it in this universe and the town planning didn't take very long, you get to sex scenes quicker.
Sure. I mean, that's a plus. And lots of sex scenes in Harry Potter films. So.
Oh, yeah. Lots of sex scenes in Harry Potter fanfic.
Oh, don't.
Let's not open that can of worms.
So the second point is, so I said that it's sort of, it is talking a little bit about segregation in the way that it's set up. And it is talking a bit about how sort of monstrous it is to make people repress what makes them them, and the sort of the destruction that can be wrought as part of that, which seem to be things that are talking about race and potentially talking about sexuality.
Sure.
And it is not a very diverse movie. It's
right.
mostly white cast. There's not a lot of African-American people on show, and no sort of visible queerness either.
Mm-hmm.
So
they should have solved that after the last Harry Potter films.
Mm.
There's a podcast series called Imaginary Worlds. They've just done a series of episodes about Harry Potter, and a lot of things that we've touched on are brought up in that, so that if you're interested in this, you could go and listen to those. One of them in particular is about the Harry Potter Alliance, that is a group of young people now that use the values that they have gained from Harry Potter to try and actually do decent activism in the world, and they are led by a much more diverse group of people than you would seemingly ever actually see in anything to do with the Harry Potter world on screen, which is a shame, really. But Eddie Redmayne has mentioned the Alliance and some of the people very high up in that in the press tours, which is awesome of him to be sort of pointing things in that direction as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not surprised by that comment whatsoever, because, you know, the first series of films was not diverse.
Yeah.
I feel like I definitely agree that they should have rectified it, because they had a great chance to do that. But
there's a whole extra debate that we haven't touched on about all the backstory that Rowling's released for the American history of magic.
Right.
Which does not do particularly well by Native Americans.
As far as I know.
Okay. We didn't have time to go into that.
Let's talk about that maybe on the next show.
Yeah.
Something I was thinking about, as we've been talking a lot about Harry Potter, is the fact that a while ago the stage show opened, I think when maybe like a couple of months ago, I think.
Oh, longer than that now, I think.
Yeah, maybe 6 months ago now, probably. And we've never spoken about it. I don't know.
None of us have seen it.
I don't. Yeah. Well, none of us have seen it, but I don't know anyone that's seen it. I don't know about, you know, any kind of buzz. So maybe let's have a Harry Potter segment, like on the next show.
I do know a couple of people who've seen it, and I'm seeing them for Christmas dinner tomorrow. So
brilliant.
Interview there.
More content planning live on air, which I love to do. We're so efficient.
It's our fave.
I have to come back for that because I'm not going to go and see that show.
No.
I have feelings about that.
Okay, yeah. So
I'll bring those back.
Bring your feelings to Harry Potter 2.0 next week's show. Thank you so much, Matt, for reviewing Harry Potter.
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Or as my mum keeps calling it, Brilliant Animals.
Brilliant Animals, but where are they?
Well, she doesn't go into that. She just says, have you seen that Brilliant Animals film yet?
There's going to be a load of people renting Where the Wild Things Are by accident, and it's going to blow their minds. But I mean, good for them. They should see that too.
Behind me, the boys, I see that Alex is halfway through his sonnet. He's doing a lot of counting on his fingers. Strat is listening to music, and he is very much deep in the zone.
He looks silent.
I'm not going to talk to you guys just yet. It's fine. You can continue.
Thank you.
Continue. We'll talk to them a little bit after this. I'm going to play you a new writing night piece now. It is called SMS.
It was such a nice date. A shard. Fancy, eh? I used to be a bit scared of the shard. I didn't want to go up in the lifts in case there was a storm and the wind blew out the glass and I fell out and drowned in Thames. Be a long way to fall. You might not even be dead when you hit the water, but you die if you fall in if you can't swim. I can't swim. It's not like there's lifeboat crews waiting to rescue people who've fallen in out of the shard, and even if they did, I suppose a load of people would fall in at once and I doubt they'd get round to me till last, because that's what usually happens. Oh, that'd be just typical, that they'd forget about me or leave me till last and then I'd definitely drown and that'd be rubbish. It was his idea, of course. I wouldn't have even said yes, except A, it felt rude to say no, and B, he was hot. Oh my God. He looked like a footballer, a retired footballer, like one of them who lives in Portugal or Spain, all tanned, or maybe mixed race, but only a tiny bit. Like his granddad came from Barbados or Pakistan or something, and cropped hair and dark brown eyes and crinkly skin, but I didn't mind that because he bought me two cocktails. Two? He didn't even ask if I wanted the second one. He just saw me glass was empty and ordered another. Last time I went out, nobody bought me nothing. It were Nando's. And he said I should pay more because I'd ordered extra coleslaw. Loser. Sean isn't like that. I'm going to text him. Thanks for a lovely evening! ! I had a great time! Smiley face with a wink. Hope to do it again soon. Shall I put kisses on? It's only a first date. No, I will, though. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Three's all right, I think. He hasn't texted me back yet. Which is weird, because I had this impression from him that he was, you know, a gentleman. Old-fashioned, you know? And I know he fancied me. I definitely know that. I could feel he fancied me through his jeans when we said goodbye. When we said goodbye, when he had his tongue halfway down my throat and his hand down my bra, and it were a good job it were underneath my coat, or God knows what the people at the station would have thought. I don't care. I don't. I shouldn't have put the kisses, should I? What do you think? I drive myself mental, but this is the fun part, isn't it? The not knowing. This is what makes it fun. Nothing. He's probably met someone else. She's probably got better hair. She's probably got better clothes. She's probably thin. I wish you were on WhatsApp. You can tell when it's been read on WhatsApp. I hate that I don't know if he's even seen my text or if he's seen it and is just ignoring it. With Sean, I think he probably has seen it and it probably is just that he's ignoring me or too busy to reply or some slag he met off Tinder, but he might not be. He might have had a heart attack. He's older, old enough for that, and he lives on his own. He's got a dog, I think, but maybe that only visits when his kids are there. And anyway, what could a dog do if he had a heart attack? Dogs are useless. It's not like Lassie. It's not like they can really do anything. I wonder if I should message him on Facebook. I found him on Facebook. It's weird. His settings are all open, so you can nearly see everything. Lots of photos. I've seen his kids. His ex, oh, she never smiles, no wonder he left her. His skiing holidays. I've never been skiing. There was a school trip once, but my mum said she didn't have any money, and even if she did, she wouldn't use it to send me on holiday, and definitely not skiing, because I'd just spend the whole time falling over like a massive, stupid spaz. Do you ski? Do you? Is it hard to learn? When did you learn? At school or something? I could learn. There's a place near Milton Keynes. Someone said you can go and get lessons. Can't be that hard. He's texted! Happy day! He said, thanks. Thanks for what? For the text? I had a lovely evening too. Oh, he probably just means thanks for that. Then, get this. A kiss! Well, that's good, isn't it? Because blokes don't always respond to the kisses, like, especially if they're masculine, and he is masculine, a manly man, so it must mean something. I know I put three, but one is good as a response, it really is. It's weird he hasn't suggested meeting again. I thought he might, because it's Wednesday now, so this would be an ideal time to arrange something for the weekend. Wonder if I should text him back. If you were me, would you text him now, or would you leave it? Or does it look needy to text him now? I could just put something funny, send a smiley face so he knows I've got it. What do you think? I don't know why you're not telling me. I know you might not think this is important. You're probably already married and you found the love of your life and you think I'm just some stupid cow, so why even bother to help me? Like, I don't deserve to be loved. I deserve to be loved. I'll wait till tomorrow. Oh, no, do you know what? I'll just send a little message so he knows I've got it. And if he likes me, then he'll think it's sweet, not desperate. He's probably insecure about all this stuff too. He hasn't texted me back. But that's all right. It's because I didn't ask him a question. Oh, I should have asked him a question. I'm an idiot. Why did you let me text him without asking a question? Why didn't you tell me to think about it for a few seconds more? God, you are useless, you lot. You're sacked. I met Kelly yesterday. You don't know her, do you? I do have other friends. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Kelly said that men nowadays expect women to take the lead, that they're all so useless, they need you to take the lead. Otherwise, they'll just stay in their pants playing computer games and looking at disgusting porn and barely even bothering to talk to women because they can get everything they want online and order pizza from that app off their phones and the whole world will die out. She goes on a bit, to be honest. But it's true that men are completely useless. So maybe he is sat in his pants playing computer games and looking at disgusting porn, not moping and feeling lonely and handsome like how I think about him. Anyway, she said I should just stop pissing about and ask him if he wants to see me again. I should just be clear. Oh, it's mad, isn't it? But I think, well, why not? At least that way I'm in control. Well, more in control. Like, if he doesn't get back to me, I know it's a no, not interested, you fat slag, rather than sitting here wondering. So I'm texting him. How are you? Smiley face. So he knows it's just a friendly greeting, not that I've been worried about him being lonely and sad. What are you doing on Friday? That's not trying too hard, is it? If he gets back to this, I'll know. I'll know he wants to see me again. And if he doesn't get back to me, I'll also know. I mean, I'll know like 97%. He might have lost his phone, or had a heart attack, or run himself over with one of his cars. Well, he's got two cars, BMWs. I saw him on Facebook. He must be minted. I have been busy. I've been sightseeing Morden, Collier's Wood. Sean lives that way. It's not why I went though. He just made it sound really nice and I've never been to that part of London, so... I wandered around the streets. I didn't know where his house was, wasn't trying to find it. I thought I might recognise it from off Facebook, but all the streets look the same. Oh, you think it'd be boring, just houses, but it was so interesting. Lots of people leave their curtains open, you can see inside. They all had big tellies and fireplaces and wooden floors. I wonder what it'd be like to live in a house. A whole house, not just some crappy room in a crappy flat with four Lithuanians who don't even talk to you, no living room. He still hasn't texted. Don't suppose he will now. Keep checking my phone just in case. I keep hoping it will beep, and it does sometimes, but it's always work. Checking if I want to do another shift. I don't. Or Kelly wondering if I want to go for a drink. I don't. Or two asking if I want to upgrade my phone. I don't. Come on, phone, make a noise for me, please. I just want him to be in touch. I just want him to kiss me and hold me and stroke my hair and tell me everything's going to be all right. I used to play with my mum's hair when she was lying on sofa all hungover, and I thought she liked it, or maybe it might make her feel better, but she yelled at me one day. She said, "Stop stroking me, you stupid little cow. Do you think I'm a dog? I'm not your f***ing dog." I wonder what sort of dog Sean has. Oh, hello again, you lot. Nice of you to finally turn up. You could have visited, no one visited, which is fine because I didn't want anyone to see me. Oh, I look a mess, don't I? He texted me. He didn't say anything very nice. He said, "If you don't leave me alone, I'll go to the police, you delusional bitch." Delusional? Good word, isn't it? I didn't know what it meant before. It's just because I made a joke. Oh, I didn't tell you about that, did I? You probably wouldn't get it. He didn't get it. Of course, I didn't mean I was actually going to go to the police to report him for attacking me. I put a smiley face on it. How could he even think I was being serious? It's insulting. That he would think I would lie about something like that to the police. It was a joke. So anyway, I went back to the river. Went wandering along to the Shard. I thought I saw him. I ran after him. It wasn't him. Doctor said I was lucky. I don't feel lucky, I feel like a twat. I wanted to throw myself into the river all dramatic, but the tide was out or something, so I just wandered down onto the sand and finished a bottle of vodka and kind of laid down and hoped the river would wash over me. There were some people around, but they didn't say anything. They didn't shout, "Don't do it, Delilah!" Why would they? They don't even know me. They just stared. I suppose one of them must have called an ambulance, or maybe there's CCTV, I don't know. I don't really remember the ambulance ride, but one of the paramedics told me, I just kept saying, "I want my mom, I want my mom, I want my mom, I don't want my mom, that's stupid, how stupid is that?" I'm fine now though. That's the main thing, I'm really fine. I've deleted my Tinder. I don't need a man. I don't need anyone, I don't even need my phone, I'm going to throw it away. No, that's silly. But I'm not going to use it for a while. Well, I should probably keep it on. Doctor said he might call. I have to go for appointments for counselling. It's rubbish, I'm fine. He's nice though. Really caring. Delilah, you have to learn to love yourself. All that self-help nonsense. But he was quite nice looking too. He looked at me like I mattered. No one ever looks at me like that. I wonder if he'll ring.
You were just listening to a piece of new writing from probably about a year ago now. That was called SMS. It was performed by Emily Jane Kerr and written by Marianne Powell. I have the guys sitting next to me. They are halfway through writing a sonnet today, doing an art. Strat and Alex are. How are you getting on? Is it? Alex is very red at the moment because he's working quick, very hard. And
it's taxing.
It's really taxing.
Yeah. Okay.
The toughest one so far.
Easily.
Interesting.
Easily.
It's just such a quiet one as well. It's so relaxing and nice to, you know.
It's taken so much more concentration. Like, all the other ones I've been able to do quite happily. Like, the first one, we were kind of almost interjecting in the show while we were drawing that.
Mm.
The sculpture you could just do with everything in background. I got, like, a minute or two into trying this and realised I couldn't do it. Like, because...
We're just talking.
I had to put headphones on and put music on. Like, there was no way I could concentrate without it.
Mm. I see that you're counting a lot on your hands,
yeah,
Alex.
I clearly haven't got the structure
you're
down.
So
yet.
Red.
So warm. I haven't got the pentameter down yet, because I'll do a line in my head and be like, "Oh, that fits perfectly," and then I'll be like, "No, that's 14 syllables. That's too many. Four too many. That's right. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Good. Fantastic. Right. I haven't made a mistake yet. Fantastic.
I keep double second guessing myself on how many syllables are in words. That's how, like desired, two or three.
The thing is, you can put a whoopsie do in it though and make it shorter if you like.
I need to be three.
Or a little accent.
You need it to be three.
Desired.
You could do desired. Desired. And have an accent on the E.
Desired.
Mm. That's what I thought. But then I thought, is it just duh and then zired? I'm pretty sure it's three. It's three, right,
it's
Matt?
It's three.
Desired. I'd have said two.
I think it's three.
Darn. I think
Desired, though.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
And that's, yeah, that sonnet right there.
And that I've got one. I've got Bakehead.
Oh, nice.
It's a little tease.
I am so excited to for you guys to read these later on. So we're going to, I'm going to let you guys get back. Helen's going to do some stuff.
How far through are you, Alex, first of all? I'm interested to know how far you've got.
I've got FGG to do.
Same here.
Ooh.
You guys are like, the timing is really good.
I was going to ask that, whether you're writing like top to bottom or... Like, because it's rhyming, whether either of you have, like, whether you were, like, missing lines and filling stuff in.
Well, that's something
I'm thinking two lines ahead to what the next rhyme has to be.
Like a chess master.
Yeah, well, that kind of makes, well, this line in here needs to be something that can lead on to that line, because I need that line to end with this word. But then you get down to, like, the fourth line in this, and then suddenly that is being dictated by the thing you only put in there to get you between the other two lines, and then you're stuck on that line, and you're like, and then I went out of whack and had too many lines rhyming with each other than should have been rhyming, and had to.
I love this. I think this is really cool.
Yeah,
I like how seriously you're taking it and how it's actually going
to
be proper.
Because you want the poem to express your love for that thing. You want it to have some form of narrative, I guess, in a way. Well, I have kind of taken that approach to it. So you don't want it to be like, I like this thing. This thing is great, wonderful, wicked. It's so wonderful. It's got a bit, more.
Why are you northern?
I don't know.
Because northern people are stupid.
I think we should retract this.
Is that your stereotype of northern people? Oh dear. Anyway, you guys should probably get back,
and we're
going to talk to Helen about a thing.
Invite more controversy.
Yeah, that's not helpful. But you'll read them. You'll read them in about 15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Yes.
15 minutes.
Oh, 5 minutes a line. Okay.
Yeah.
Four.
You can do it. It's fine.
I was scared.
Okay, we'll move back quietly now. Yeah, good. Thank you. Okay, the boys are back at their writing stations. They've got 15 minutes to finish their sonnets, and then they're going to read them out at the end of the show, which we're very excited for. We're going to talk a little bit about shows that we've seen. This isn't officially Arts Thing of the Week, because Vicky's not here and she's not doing an arts thing. But we're going to talk to Helen, because we love talking to Helen.
Yes. Aww.
And she's going to tell us about... it's a musical, right?
Yeah. It's Half a Sixpence.
Okay.
Which is quite an old musical, but they've brought it back onto the West End, and it feels quite modern. The story's not remotely modern, but because it's choreographed by Andrew Wright, he just brings, bordering on acrobatics, to everything he choreographs. He did Guys and Dolls recently. Before that, he did Singing in the Rain. Basically anything that's had an amazing review for the dancing is him. And basically, you can go and see this just for the dancing, even if you're not that bothered about dancing in musicals normally.
Really?
Yeah.
I love a bit of dancing.
Is there
dancing?
Any tap?
Any what?
Tap.
They do a few tap steps, but they don't do it on a tap floor, so it doesn't really give you your tap fix in a way that other things might.
Yeah. Do you like tap, Ellie?
I love tap.
Oh, really? Yeah. I just learned something completely new about you.
Oh,
I did
man.
Not know that.
Strat and Alex do tap.
God. Strat can actually do tap, so that would be unfair.
What? What?
Well, he used to do, what's it called, jazz, tap and modern.
Okay.
Well, I didn't know about the tap bit.
This is a conversation that we need to carry on off air, because I am super intrigued. This is not for public consumption, I don't think.
Okay, you're getting too excited.
I'm very excited.
So what sort of, can you describe the style of dance that it is? I think what I really like is where it's, as you say, it's got a kind of a modern thing going on, but I loved Singing in the Rain because it had kind of classic, like, musical dance steps.
Yeah.
But sort of with a modern angle on it.
Yeah.
Is that what we're looking at?
It feels like that. It feels like a huge traditional musical set piece dance number, but with just enough sort of modern edges on the choreography that it's exciting.
Mm.
I think maybe about 15 minutes into the show, I turned to Strat's sister, who I was seeing the show with, and went, by all rights, somebody should have cracked their head open by now. Like, there's so much flipping around.
Really?
It's incredible. So the story is basically that there's these two kids, and the boy is going to go away and do an apprenticeship, and So he saws a sixpence in half and gives half of it as a love token.
Oh, like a friendship necklace.
Aww.
Yeah, it's cute. But then this guy goes and does his apprenticeship, and then he comes into a load of money and then basically ends up being conflicted over this very posh girl that he's fallen for and can now actually attain because mm-hmm. he's got money. Or the girl who's still carrying the other half of the sixpence. And there's a lot of silly back and forth. The plot is not astounding, but the guy who's in the male lead is on stage almost constantly. He can sing beautifully. He carries off the part really charmingly with his acting, and then his dancing is incredible. He does a bit of tap, which is sort of extra on the dancing, and then he plays the banjo.
Oh wow!
Whoa!
He is a catch. He sounds like a catch. Oh, is he beautiful?
Okay. In a boyish way, not like really delicate, but he.
Oh,
the
I
show,
love them. I love. Yeah. Oh, I'm not going to say that.
But you can say you really like them young and frail looking.
Yeah.
Frail.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Not frail.
Ladies.
Not like Secret Garden.
Like,
frail.
Like a Victorian street urchin on the cusp of TSB. Not TSB. TB.
Speaking of. God damn it. Speaking of the Secret Garden, I actually I met Dickon once.
No, I love this story.
And I was drunk at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I hit on him. I wasn't strapped at the time, but I basically went up to him and went, "You're really good in the Secret Garden," and he went, "Yeah, great," and ran off.
The Secret Garden is a children's film off of the '90s.
It's a really good film.
Yeah,
we should retro review that.
I forced my parents to borrow it from the library over and over and over again.
I loved it
if it ever
as a
wasn't
kid.
There, I would be livid.
Can you imagine like playing that for like a modern day child now? They'd be so bored.
I know,
with
it's
it.
Sad.
It
I'm
is
going
very
to
sad.
Not allow my children to be exposed to the modern world so that
yeah.
They
can
enjoy
watch stuff like
pure,
the Dark Crystal
pure truth,
and Labyrinth.
Like, yeah, like the Secret Garden.
Yeah, this has taken a turn, this review.
the boyishly beautiful man in Half a Sixpence is named Charlie Stemp.
Thank you
yes,
very much, Matt.
I read an wondering. Interview with him in The Stage, I think.
Okay.
And he sounds delightful as well.
He's, yeah.
Like a really nice chap.
I think, I do think he probably is a bit of a catch.
A catch.
I don't know what that means.
We like him, and he should look out, because if he's out by the stage door one night, Helen might
just go
approach
grab
him.
No, I mean, because I didn't even go around to the stage door that night, but that might have been because I was with my fiancé's sister.
Right.
Yeah.
Awkward.
Where is it playing?
Noel Coward.
Oh, right. Yes, I accidentally called that once the Noel Edmund Theatre.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's upsetting.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Very upsetting. Alex laughed for days.
It's something I was intending to go and see, or sort of thinking about it, so now having heard that,
I'd like to go and see it. Do you want to go see it?
Okay, yeah. I think if there's still some available, I'll check, but there were cheap-ish tickets available on the Get Into London Theatre website, which runs discount tickets for January and February.
Amazing.
I suspect
I love dancing.
Good. I suspect there are some good value tickets around because there's no sort of big face. There's no star casting in it.
Mm.
And it's not like a huge musical that was made into a film that's well loved. It's just a bit obscure in enough ways
that it's not hit the ridiculous prices.
Yeah. But it's so worth it. It's just a really, really incredible show. I had a great time.
All right, well, maybe in the new year you might hear Ellie and I review Half a Sixpence.
Yeah, and I have got some shows that I'm booked in to see in January and February, which I'll be talking about on the show.
Amazing.
So I am re-watching some shows that I really enjoyed, which is The Play That Goes Wrong,
mm-hmm.
the comedy about a bank robbery,
mm-hmm.
And
these are the titles of the plays, to be, to
yeah.
be clear.
Yeah, they don't sound very...
These aren't just like Friends episode titles. That Ellie's
they're
really
my short
not.
Reviews yeah. before I've even seen them. No, they are the titles of the plays. And I'm also seeing Nice Fish, which is the new comedy with Mark Rylance, which I'm
amazing.
Very excited about. I'm seeing that in February. So I'll be regaling you with tales of all of these productions.
Yes, and before we get the boys back to read their sonnets, guys, I'm going to give you like a 2-minute warning.
This is the 2-minute warning.
This is the 2-minute warning.
Strat, this is a 2-minute warning.
Strat's.
2-minute warning.
You got 2 minutes. Okay.
Just made a horse noise.
The boys have got 2 minutes, but we're going to tell you about something that we're doing in January, which is our showcase.
Yes, so the annual Showcase Award is a new writing competition that we run at Blackshaw. The prize is that you get to have your work developed into a full-length piece and staged by us at a London theatre. So if you want to enter, if you have a bit of new writing that you've started but haven't finished, or you've got an idea that you haven't yet put pen to paper on, then this is the place to come. We are looking for pieces of theatre. They can be up to 15 minutes in length, and there are some other stipulations in terms of cast size and so on. All the guidance is on our website. The deadline for submitting is the 30th of December, so that's the end of this month. We are honking on about it on Facebook and Twitter and on our newsletters. If you're not already signed up, then I recommend you do that. Again, just go to our website for all the information. That's blackshawonline.com. And we are looking basically for as much variety as possible in terms of genres and in terms of writers as well. So if you know someone who's an aspiring writer or an established writer, please do direct their attention to this. It's a really great opportunity. We provide all optional support. So we can offer a mentor to work with you during the development process. We can offer workshops with actors. We can offer table reads with a mixture of writers and audience members and actors. Basically anything you can think of that would support the development of your writing is something that we can provide during the process to the winner. So the idea is that you submit by the 30th of December, and then we make our selections of a shortlist. The shortlisted pieces are performed at a special new writing night at the end of January, on the 30th of January, at the Hen and Chickens Theatre. And from that shortlist, we will select the winning piece, and your work would then be staged the following year, so that's 2018, at a London theatre. And to date, we've used the Pleasance Theatre, which is a lovely venue, and that's where we'll be performing this year's winner. Carlick Ogue by Jerry Moynihan will be on at the Pleasance in March next year. So it's a really good chance for people who are either new writers or they've got some new writing that they want some help developing. And part of the kind of campaign in terms of looking for submissions is including testimonials and video chats with people who have taken part in the process before. So if you want to hear more about it, then check out all of our online content. Go to blackshawonline.com, follow us on Twitter and Facebook, look at our blog, and you'll find everything you need to know.
Yes, we're very excited about, well, I'm excited about January Showcase.
Yes, absolutely.
My favourite term of the year.
It is a brilliant
Come back
scheme.
From Christmas, we go to a nice showcase, new writing night, and it's brilliant. Speaking of writing, guys, are you ready?
There's still some counting on fingers.
There is a lot of counting on fingers.
It looks like maybe it's a final check, though. Oh, he's put his hands up. Pankhurst has finished.
I'm done. I'm just writing it out so I can actually read it.
Okay,
cool. All right, the boys are back, sat next to me now. Strat and Alex have finished their sonnets for the evening. How are you feeling about this situation now?
I can't wait to hear what Alex has written.
Okay. I'm nervous as hell.
Okay.
Yeah, this one's... Before it was kind of like, you know, it was kind of... Yeah, look what we did. It was kind of funny, but this is...
This is real, man.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because this feels like more than any other art that you've done so far, this feels a bit like an English class assignment.
Yes.
Come up in front of the lesson and read your work.
Matt's your lecturer. Hmm. He's definitely your lecturer.
This is probably closest to what we should both be competent at.
Yeah.
As theatre boards.
I've never been a writer. You have.
No, but you know
how words should sound.
You understand.
You are literate.
The poetry within prose.
Doesn't mean I can execute.
Alex wants to lower the bard right now.
I don't want to lower the bard. I just want everyone to know that
they should lower their expectations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not just puns, but callbacks to puns. That's where we are right now.
We have flipped a coin, and Alex is going first in reading his sonnet. So, would you like to take it away?
Yes. This is sonnet number one, and it sounds a little bit like this. The champion of this Christmassy treat is porcine in nature and two-folded. Baked in oven, no frying pan greets. Wee meaty morsel, juicy, not scalded. Bacon, oh bacon, could thee be bettered? If pork is your fancy, then yes it can. For sausage is king, even when fettered. by Russia rat twice, that if it span. Warm and tied up is this neat porky bow. Timing is key here, don't forget to glaze. If the juices run clear, ready, you know. Scoff them all down, then drift into a haze. Trust not if no joy, trust not if no jig. Can anything beat a blanketed pig?
Outstanding.
Porky Bo.
Yes, I can't believe you missed Porky
Bo. Is that kind of long-lost brother Alfie?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
That was truly wonderful. Well done.
Thank you.
Aisha looks more moved by that poem than by the Shakespeare sonnet you read earlier. I don't know what it means. Pork, she's on board.
Oh dear.
I am a... you know, human husk, and I don't feel emotion, but I do feel bacon, so that does make sense.
Makes shopping with her really awkward.
We're going to hand the mic over to Strat now. Go.
All right. You go. This is also sonnet number one. What a coincidence. Looked at festive feasts, you are maligned by those who preach of family and love. Desiring the cut of the knife, so kind, the bite of rejection by those above is all that lies beneath your Christmas tree. Poultry is the attention you receive, while attention is all the poultry sees, now stuffed, dressed for its death, only you grieve. Never will you know the gravy's kiss, or, perched upon a plate, dare to believe that you are wanted, loved, desired, or more. But this Christmas miracle just falls flat. If honest, you are ne'er in any doubt. Left cold and for the compost, you are sprout.
Gravy's kiss.
Yeah, I hated that bit.
Oh, that was good.
That was so well constructed.
Yes.
It flowed so well.
Yeah.
That was a very lovely flowing sonnet. This is a really hard decision.
I know.
I don't know, because they're just, I'm not sure. I don't think I can pick
a
winner.
Strat's had more finesse.
But
I felt like Alex's spoke to me.
I want to give it to Strat for the poultry wordplay alone.
That was fantastic.
Strong.
Oh, this is really tricky.
Where are the scores at overall currently?
We're
1-1.
Ah, okay.
Mm. I'm going to go with Strat's only because I think it was very true to form.
Right.
I'm sorry, husband.
It's not a problem.
I mean, he was only going to frame it for your Christmas present.
He was only going to do a cross stitch of it, you know.
If I don't get a goddamn pig in blanket in the next 24 hours, I'm going to be furious.
And that, I think, is why mine was clearly the better one. Because who wants a sprout now and who wants a pig in blanket?
I feel really upset for sprouts.
I love sprouts, I have to
really
say.
Sad.
I'm a big fan.
I don't like them.
Pathos for sprouts.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going for.
Yours wasn't going to inspire me in the same way.
No, Helen's vegetarian.
Obviously, I'm going to feel empathetic towards...
You've not been
interesting bit of history behind this poem in its hours. Nice. This was actually going to be this sort of thing, but about Nutloaf. But I couldn't find anything good that rhymed with Nutloaf. So
I don't even know what Nutloaf is.
It had to become about a sprout. So I could get the no doubt line
well
in.
Well done.
So halfway through it became about a sprout. I didn't even know what I was what this poem was till halfway through it.
Something was being channeled through.
Yeah.
Okay, so Strat's got two. Ellie, did you pick Alex?
I did.
Okay. Helen, you're gonna be the decider.
Yeah,
here.
Strat.
Okay, you're the winner.
Well done, congratulations.
That was fantastic, guys. I really enjoyed that. And I feel like there's definitely legs in this as like an actual idea for we could develop this. Mm. I really enjoyed listening to them.
What, Strat and Alex do what? Or Strat and Alex
no,
do
like,
sonnets?
No, like, just everyone does sonnets.
Yeah. Oh, right.
We should get an evening activity.
Yeah, we should. Yeah.
Are we putting
we are so fun.
What are we doing with the sonnets now we've written them?
Well, we will put them up online.
Yeah, they can be typed up and then we can do a lovely blog post.
Yeah.
Shame we don't have a Christmas new writing night. I could have performed them live.
Yes. Oh, wow. Well, you know, I'm sure that we there's still the wedding, mate.
Yeah,
you know.
There is.
don't forget about that.
Nothing. No.
Just but you voted for me. Surely that's permission.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Yeah, twice.
Oh dear. Right. Good.
That has brought us to the end of the show. The guys might be back next time. Will you be back next time to do another art?
Should be.
Yeah.
Depends when next time is.
Okay.
Yeah. It's Christmas Day.
No. We won't be recording this on Christmas Day. It's okay. Do you have any ideas? Any ideas?
Oh, of what we might do as art.
Mm.
Ooh.
Should we talk about this maybe offline?
I
and
think
then,
maybe.
Yeah, okay.
If anyone's got any suggestions, feel free to tweet them in at
Blackshaw
Updates.
Yeah.
I know this sounds like it's planned months in advance.
It's not.
But it's literally hours in advance.
It's basically 5 minutes this was planned in advance.
Well, don't give away our secrets.
Well, we knew we were doing poetry last week, but yeah, the crux of it.
The real finer details. Yeah. So Strat and Alex will be back. Matt will be reviewing something that we don't know yet.
Not sure. I was going to do Rogue One, but it's just
you
not
miss
out
it,
in
don't
time.
You?
Yes,
that's a shame.
Yeah.
I really don't
for another,
like it.
For another 2 years running, we've not managed to cover a Star Wars.
Oh well.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah. So
something. Not sure yet.
A
Tweet
film.
Me.
A film. Matt will be reviewing a film, and we'll all be back in 2 weeks' time. But thank you to everyone.
Thank you
for this evening, and that's good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Cheerio. Love your sprouts.